This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the morning run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris. I'm going to be keeping you company all the way to 10 o'clock today. And with me here in the studio, I have Kusu Chuang and Joyce Goh. Hello.
Good morning. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Bright and early, 6 o'clock right now, Monday, the 1st of October. It's the first day of the fourth quarter of the year. I love it when the first day of the month starts on a Monday. I feel like all the stars aligned and everything becomes, it's like my the OCD part of me is satisfied with that. Again, you can join our conversation anytime this morning, all the way till 10 o'clock. I would love to hear from you on WhatsApp. Our number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Just mention your name so we can read it out on air. And I've been reminded to say, don't text while you're driving.
You just, serious? Who
yes,
told you to do that?
I was reminded the weekend that every time I ask for comments and questions on WhatsApp, just to remind people that if they're driving, don't text. You can always ask, you know, if you have someone else in the car, or wait till you're parked to text. Or send us a voice note if you're too lazy to text. That's also one way to do it. But again, well, WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899. Let's take a quick look, guys, at what's happened over the weekend. So a couple of big things happened this weekend. We've, of course, had the nomination of the Port Dickson by-elections. It was expected to be, I guess, quite a mundane event, but of course, Malaysian politics will always surprise you when you least expect it. And it's now turned out to be a 7-corner fight with...
Good Lord, 7?
7, yes, that's what? Right. Anwar Ibrahim, as, of course, PKR president-elect expected, we knew there was going to be a past candidate, Nazari Mokhtar, and also Stevie Chan as an independent. Issa Samad, former Negeri Menteri Besar of Negeri Sembilan, was also going to run as an independent.
And Felda chairman.
And Felda chairman, that's
and
right.
Battled and battled Felda chairman.
That's right.
Yeah. And also, I think, Anwar's former aide.
That was a surprise.
Yeah.
That was a surprise, wasn't
apparently,
it?
Apparently, Anwar Peluk or Saiful Peluk Anwar.
They shook hands.
I got text messages to say that they hugged each other.
I have not seen photographic evidence of that. But I understand there was an encounter and it was all very civil. But boy, what a surprise, eh?
Yeah. This is supposed to be a shoe-in for Anwar. What happened? Right?
Democracy happened, Chuang.
Democracy happened. Sometimes it works, sometimes it
doesn't.
Sometimes
it works and sometimes it surprises you when you least expect it. We'll be keeping a close eye on this and, of course, bringing you all the latest when this happens. Of course, campaigning has kicked off with the polls happening in the middle of October. All right, we also had the UMNO General Assembly, the first General Assembly after they lost Putrajaya and GE14, and that had concluded yesterday evening. It was a much quieter affair this time around, wasn't it?
Yes, a lot quieter, as Mel said. And there's quite a lot of things that have come up from that. I think people are saying that the atmosphere also less vibrant, but when there was news of everyone was looking forward to this General Assembly, right? And they're saying that they're looking for direction.
Mm.
And the question is whether or not there's a direction that's come up from this. And some people are saying that, no, it's still quite directionless. That's one of the things that's come up from the Assembly, as well as... also, I think another thing to note is that there were some past members who attended it. Who were seen at the Assembly.
The whole unity government argument.
Still there. I think the UMNO President, Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi, pushing that rhetoric as well, cooperation with other parties to win back Putrajaya. Now, Joyce, you and I are going to be speaking to Mohsin Abdullah about this on Pressing Matters. That's after the 9:30 news. He is a long-time commentator on Malaysian politics, currently a columnist at The Edge.
Yes, he's a contributing editor there. We're going to be speaking to Mohsin about what the outcome of this UMNO assembly and
to help us make sense.
I remember last week I spoke to Khairi Jamaluddin, remember?
Vaguely Melissa? Remember that.
Vaguely remember that.
Remember it. Was that KJ? Yeah, that's
KJ,
right.
KJ, yeah. One of the more interesting things he said was in combination, him and Kuli's vote versus Zahid Hamidi's combined showed that the party generally was more lenient towards a progressive stance.
Well, that was the, Zahid's UMNO, he's looking at the popular vote.
Correct.
Yeah, but
correct.
UMNO runs on this warlord, excuse me, no, Freudian slip.
Freudian slip right there.
The electoral college system. So yeah. It's difficult because it's not one person has one vote.
Correct. So it's kind of like interesting that the General Assembly had this kind of like soul-searching element to it that, you know, that we saw over the weekend.
Yeah, that's right. So more on that after 9:30 news, a bit more analysis. We'll be back with more news, including a look at the UN General Assembly. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. It's coming up to 11 minutes past 6 o'clock on Monday, the 1st of October. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Goh and Koo Soo Chuang. And that was The Smiths with Cemetery Gates. And before that, Creedence Clearwater Revival with Have You Ever Seen the Rain? Of course, one of the biggest events over last week was the UN General Assembly. We had our Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir, speak there again. So the comeback kid after a long hiatus back addressing the world community. Apparently, he spoke for 20 minutes straight with no notes.
Yeah, that's what you have after the ability, after being in government for decades and decades.
Don't need notes for a UN General Assembly speech.
I heard the whole thing in its entirety, and one of the things he talked about was obviously the spread of terrorism and the conflict around the world. He said that you can't really stop the spread of terrorism without addressing the root causes, which is basically the whole Palestinian-Israeli Palestinian conflict at the heart of the Middle East, and I think that's the real issue there.
I thought that so I wasn't watching it live, but I was following the live tweets. Apparently, he got. He got some laughs from the crowd, poking fun at himself.
Yeah,
calling dictator. Himself a strong man, a dictator. So there you go. I think better than Trump a little bit earlier in the week, where he was trying to make a joke, saying that this U.S. administration has achieved more than any other U.S. administration.
Just something, yeah.
The other thing that happened at the UN General Assembly that also was of note was on the opening day of the General Assembly, the world's most popular K-pop group, BTS, took to the podium to address the room. And they gave a 6.5-minute speech about their work with UNICEF, for which they had raised more than $1.1 billion, almost $1 million over the past year. Now, the question on everyone's minds was, what place does a K-pop group have in international affairs?
Yeah, well, I must say this BTS group, K-pop group, they've done really well. I mean, they've worldwide, they're known worldwide. Unlike the other Korean groups, like I think there's a girls' generation group. There's also like Psy and all that. That's managed to break out in within like the Korean market, but not. They've not done as well as this BTS that has gone past the language barriers.
Well, I think BTS success is also due to the fact that they've broken into the North American market,
yes,
which is, I think, the holy grail for K-pop, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So this whole issue revolves around the issue of soft power, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the issue of soft power is basically the opposites of military hard might. When you want to go and enforce your dominance in a particular region, traditionally, you would use tanks and soldiers and armored personnel. But in this day and age, attraction and coercion, I think, is the way, right? So, for example, if you wanted peace in the Middle East, you wouldn't send in your jet fighters to achieve peace. You would send in Angelina Jolie, for example, with a broad smile and her model husband, and then off you go.
Ex-husband,
you know what I mean?
Now.
Ex-husband now. Or if you were, for example, wanting to open new digital markets in emerging Asia, you wouldn't send in Skype, CEO from Skype, you would send in PewDiePie, for example, right?
I think the question or the conversation about soft power is really fascinating, especially if you look at Korean soft power, right? The way to win over hearts is really through art and entertainment and celebritydom. And K-pop has really done that. And it has less baggage than, say, American soft power or British soft power, because it doesn't come with a colonial baggage, right? The colonialism baggage.
Yeah, so soft power is like, it's all about attracting, I guess, foreign public to be more interested into your country, mm-hmm, what your country has to offer. In K-pop sense, I think they have well, I guess created awareness and interest in people wanting to learn the Korean language. They've also made people want to visit Korea more.
I mean, when Joe Lau turned 30, I think he had people like Swiss Beats and Dr. Dre and people like Alicia Keys at his concert. But who was his headline act? It was Psy. Do you remember Gangnam Style, right?
Of course. Yes. Who doesn't?
The first video to hit a billion hits on YouTube, he had Psy. Right? Yeah. And Psy is South Korean.
He also got Psy to go to Penang to perform.
That's right. For the elections concert. In 2013. Yeah. Suddenly everybody knew that Gangnam was a neighborhood in South Korea.
So what can be Malaysia's soft power positioning?
That's the problem. What can it be? And then we've got people like Yuna, right? And Yuna is kind of like, she's been marginalized by the, not marginalized, but she hasn't achieved mainstream acceptance in Malaysia. For whatever reason.
But she had to go abroad.
She had to go abroad to achieve.
To get that breakthrough.
Exactly.
Yes.
Mm. And that's a crying shame.
Well, it's not just entertainment, right? I mean, I'm sure that surely there can be other ways Malaysia can spread its soft power. I'm thinking food.
Food,
for example. I mean, like, for example, Manchester United, major global name.
Exactly.
Right?
That's a great example
Peace
of soft
ambassadors,
power.
For example, mm-hmm. wanted to, right? Except that
so
some
the nasi lemak potential?
Yeah. Well, tell us what you think. What can be Malaysia's soft power positioning? We want to hear from you. Can there be an M-pop? For instance, our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to come back and take a look at Elon Musk versus the SEC. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:21 right now. Mashaboom by Feist there. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. If you've just joined us, I'm Melissa Idris with Kusu Chuang and Joyce Goh. And we're taking a look at Elon Musk reaching a deal with US financial regulators over those tweets that he posted about taking Tesla private. So if you were following the story last Friday, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, the financial regulator in the US, had come out to say that they were planning to sue Elon Musk for alleged securities fraud. But he's reached a deal with them. And as part of that deal, he must step down as Tesla chair within 45 days and he must pay a fine. So he's going to step down as a Tesla chairman, but he can still be CEO, right?
Yeah, I think in many ways, I think he dodged a bullet because I think SEC's original lawsuit carried a heftier punishment. I think banning him from serving as a public company director or officer. That would have been
him to be running the company, right? Because it's his vision, it's his idea. He's an amazing technology maverick. You just don't want him running the board.
So you think this is a good thing, a separation of those two roles? He's no
Absolutely.
Longer chairman.
It's like having Najib being prime minister and finance minister at the same time. You want to have separation of those two roles. But I just want to say, right, his tweet has cost him 40 million bucks, right?
Wait, 20 million for the fine.
For a fine, yep. And then to the company, 20 million for flouting SEC rules. Mm. So people like the Kardashians make, I don't know, like Ronaldo, the footballer, they make hundreds of thousands of dollars per tweet. He loses. Yeah. Not that it's going to make a dent in his personal fortune, because he's worth nearly $20 billion.
That's right.
I think they can make $1 million US dollars on each Instagram post, just for one post.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but maybe Elon Musk can learn a thing or two from Kim Kardashian.
You're wrong. Do you remember his tweet?
That felt like a weird Absolutely, sentence right? to say.
He would be mortified. I would be mortified.
But it's a fact, though. I mean, look at what he did. Just one tweet that cost him 20 million.
But it's not just a tweet. So when he was on the podcast with, what was it, Joe Rogan, and he was smoking marijuana on that podcast, apparently, although marijuana is legal in California, after he did that, the shares fell. Tesla shares fell.
Yeah, because you don't want a CEO kind of company chairman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So maybe what Elon Musk now needs is spend a little bit of money, have a social media strategy.
But you know what, right? Richard Branson was famously on record a few years ago for having said that he smoked weed with his son Sam on holiday in the Bahamas, right? The difference then is because Virgin Galactic or Virgin whatever wasn't listed at the time. And it's in line with Richard Branson's maverick personality. Do you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, so that's part of his persona.
That's right.
I think there's something different about, you know, being a publicly traded company.
Yeah.
And you know, especially, I don't know, do we see Elon Musk as this eccentric genius and we give him a lot of leeway to do whatever he wants?
But he is leading a listed company and it comes with responsibilities and you know, he has to be, he has shareholders to answer to. You know, he has, I mean, for me, if I'm a shareholder, I'll be concerned. So, the way he tweets out things and all that, it is concerning.
So people more astute than me, remember his tweet when he said that he was going to take Tesla private, right? He said, oh, you know, for whatever sake, I'm going to round up to 400 $20 per share. Nice 20% premium over the last premium over the traded share price, right? But you know what? In weed, in marijuana circles, 420 is kind of it's
the,
a thing, right?
The date,
it's 420 is weed day, mm-hmm. April the 20th.
So people read into that?
I think so, as you do.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when he tweeted that out, there was a broader discussion about what, you know, how CEOs should use social media, because we want CEOs in this day and age to be plugged in.
Transparent.
To, yeah, and transparent, and to have that kind of interaction, as opposed to, you know, not being digital savvy. But this is, I think, gone to the other end of the extreme, where there's no curation at all of the things that you say.
But also to drive up a stock price, I mean, intentionally,
you don't
not.
Want to be driving you're share still, prices yeah, anywhere, yeah, right? Because
yeah.
that's fronting.
Yeah.
So it's fine. It's so incongruous that someone like Elon Musk, who has things like the Hyperloop and SpaceX and Tesla in his head, he doesn't know how to handle social media. In fact, in that interview with Joe Rogan, he said that social media is the bane of our times.
Right. Okay. That's what...
Right? Yeah. Because it just... Right? For all the reasons mentioned aforementioned.
Which is why I said maybe take private classes from Kim Kardashian. I think Selena Gomez as well. So you were telling me that... Which footballer was it that had...
Cristiano Ronaldo. Her Instagram post, $800,000.
My goodness. Can you imagine?
That's all right, isn't it?
That's all right. All I get from an Instagram post is I lose half an hour of my time thinking of a caption.
Right? That's right. It's such a time muncher.
It is. All right. It's coming up to the 6:30 news bulletin. We've got Lynn Mark to bring you the first headlines of the day and take you there the doors with Light My Fire, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Hello and good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Melissa, Joyce and Chuang today. That was Men at Work Down Under. Now, there's been quite a bit of backlash on social media towards Michelle Yeoh, or Tan Sri Michelle Yeoh to you and me. And this was after she was announced as the producer of the film version of Billion Dollar Whale. So I think after the news media reported that SK Global's Ivanhoe Pictures would be the company that obtained the rights to the book, I guess many took to venting online against Michelle Yeoh's involvement in Billion Dollar Whale because she had previously endorsed Dato' Sri Najib Razak.
Yeah, so let's take it from the positives first, right? Obviously, she's a former Bond girl. She's been in several large and hit movies, most recently Crazy Rich Asians. And for her to be producing this, what is essentially going to be probably one of the biggest movies next year, 2019, she's a Malaysian, she's female, so all kinds of like boxes to be ticked, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, she would more likely than not ensure a mainly Asian ensemble. So for gender diversity, for interests of Malaysia, also for the interests of Asians in general,
right.
She's a good choice. Mm. The only problem for us in Malaysia is that she was avowedly pro-Najib back in the day. She even endorsed his support or his handling of the Rohingya crisis back in the day. And now she's producing a novel.
A movie based on the book, yeah.
That underlines the corruption in this country. That's the problem.
Yeah, Chuang, you said she's also, well, she's Malaysian, but she also has exposure into Hollywood. So she can marry the both. Like, right. She has experience in working in Hollywood movies, and she's also Malaysian. But what I don't understand is, well, I do understand to a certain extent the backlash for Michelle Yeoh, because given her support for Najib and all that.
Yeah.
But people are not they're not asking how come the authors of the book, the Billion Dollar Whale book, how come they agreed to her producing the movie?
Okay. So,
I don't know. I mean, that's another thing people are asking, you know, because everyone's like, yay, thank you for writing the book, the Billion Dollar Whale book. So the authors are Tom Wright and Bradley Hope, they came out with, surely they must have a say as to who will produce the movie based on a book, right? I mean, that's what some people
see. That's the assumption.
Asking.
We don't know that, right? We don't know whether they have a say. Maybe the film rights were sold to Ivanhoe Pictures, and not sure who has a say. Mm. I think we should dial it back a little bit. The backlash, I think, is time. I disagree with the backlash. I think it's because people don't understand what a role of a film producer does. It's really to raise financing for a movie and to organize the film production, right? Secondly, I think the backlash is also coming from people who haven't read the book. The book is not about Najib Razak. The book is about Joe Lo. Mm. The book is about the corruption of the global financial system. And, you know, granted that she was a supporter of Najib Razak, fine. I don't think she'll have a say in the script. I don't think she'll have a say in the direction. She's a producer. So
I actually think her behavior is actually quite consistent because, I mean, look, she's a Tan Sri, right? And her Tan Sri ship was given to her back in the day when the former government was in power. And obviously, she's aligned with the former government because her father was an MCA. And she's a member of your family. Yeah. The Yeo family, obviously.
They're MCA.
Mm-hmm. And the Yeo family are very in aligned with the former administration. So for her to be, you know, for people like her and the Yeo family, it's all about business. It's all about commercial interests. It's all about money.
And this is going to be the biggest movie next year.
It's going to be the biggest movie in the world.
But the book is,
So she's still interested in money. Nothing has changed. For her, the color green is the most important. And that's the way it is.
Well, the book is based on Jolo, but it also has there's also a storyline on Najib as well. It shows how Najib together
Najib is almost a side player in this whole
issue. Yeah, but his name, and it also shows how, I mean, there's a view as well. Could Jolo have gotten access to that kind of money if he was not given the keys to the car? You know what
understood.
I mean?
Yeah, I understand completely, but I don't know whether, you know. So I think the criticism towards her saying that she's an opportunist, saying that she has lacked integrity, I think that's missing the point a little bit. Where we should be worried about is how this movie is going to portray, or if it's going to be true to the book, right? And
lenient to Najib.
Yeah, and give full justice to the book. And I can say it's going to be quite difficult given that, you know, the sensitivities of the legalities around it, the legal cases that's still happening.
Investigations as well, still ongoing. Definitely. That hasn't been tied up yet.
I did see a tweet that I would like to repeat. I wish I could remember who it was and I could credit it, but someone suggested that perhaps you could tweak the title of the book for the movie and have it The Whale of Wall Street instead of The Wolf of Wall Street. So maybe get Leonardo DiCaprio to play something in that.
That's right.
All right, it's coming up to 6:47. We'll be back with more news and analysis after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:50 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run. Justin Townes Earle there with My Baby Drives. I'm Melissa Idris with Kusi Chuang and Joyce Goh. You can join our conversation this morning. We're taking all the way up to 10 o'clock and our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. It looks like it could be a very rainy morning today. But stay with us. We're going to give you updates of all the biggest news that happened over the weekend. One of the big news that happened, of course, was the UMNO Annual General Assembly. So I think this was the 42nd meeting. It concluded yesterday evening, and it is the first meeting that they've held, or the first AGM that they've held, after losing Putrajaya in GE14 and now as the opposition. So I guess taking a closer look at the UMNO AGM, it was a quieter affair, and most participants and media and political watchers were looking for a sense of direction from party leadership, particularly UMNO President Dato' Sri Zaid Hamidi. But it looks like there wasn't much to be said. It was quite amusing to watch some of the news headlines that came out over the weekend about this, isn't it, Joyce?
Yeah, I think one of the headlines that caught our attention was that past leaders attended the UMNO General Assembly. I think several past leaders were spotted there. And for the first time ever, I think, there are talks of a possible alliance between the two traditional rivals. So that's one thing that, you know, to be spotted in the UMNO General Assembly. I think also UMNO members were also spotted in passes.
Muktamar, that's right. Yes. So this is, I guess, returning the RSVP, perhaps. So they went to passes Muktamar, so now now the other side is coming to sit for UMNO's AGM.
Yeah, I guess the strength of UMNO's conviction can perhaps be exemplified in the Songkok sales that happened in the PWTC. I think one of the newspapers citing a Songkok trader saying that in the past over a five-day stretch, 80,000 ringgit worth of Songkok to, you know, this particular round should be struggling to sell 30,000. So, I mean, I guess it's a sign, 30,000 ringgit worth of Songkok, but it's a sign of the times because UMNO is really in a soul-searching position right now, having seen people like Tok Pa leave the party, and obviously people like Tok Pa's caliber don't come along very often. Mm. And as underlined by KJ's discussion with you last week, Melissa, there is a rift within the party. There are those who believe in a more progressive, more liberal approach to the direction the party should be taking. And then the ones who are still in the mainstream, who are basically ingrained in the more conservative and more establishment-focused approach of UMNO.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. The factionalism is there. But also, I think what's driving the wedge between the factionalism wider is the fact that there's no clear direction from the top, right? So I know Dato' Sri, so it's been reported that Dato' Sri Zaid Hamidi had met with Mahathir, Tun Dr. Mahathir a few times, had met with PAS leadership a few times, had met even with PKR leadership a few times. So what's happening? Who are they working with? What is this new unity government that they're trying to conceive? So I guess a little clarity. And you know what? It's not going down well with all UMNO members, right? I think not everyone is open to a unity government. Not everyone wants to work with other parties. And it's really about, okay, tell us where you want the party to go, and so we can decide if we're supporting you or not.
Yeah, clear direction is important. I think a couple of things that's come up from the event as well was that I think Zaid Hamidi proposed a two-term limit for the post of party president.
And this that's can only of, be a good thing, right?
Yeah, that's one of the things that's come up from that. And also lowering the membership age. I think they're looking to lower it to 16 in anticipation of Putrajaya's move to lower the voting age.
To 16.
Gosh, they're scraping the barrel there,
no,
aren't they?
No, it's not about scraping the barrel. The worry is that you're lowering it to an age where it's school-going children still, right? And that's my concern.
Yeah, 18 should be the traditional age of consent. But, you know, that's sweating the small stuff because age limits and term limits are one thing, but the direction, the ethos, the whole spiritual direction is much more important. And the fact that with several past members being seen in the crowd attending an UMNO General Assembly must have obviously struck a bit of a wrong chord with some UMNO traditionalists, because UMNO and PAS have traditionally been, you know, at loggerheads with each other from a direction perspective. What is going on? I think that was the basis of why Tok Pah left the party in the first place, isn't it?
One of the many things I believe Tok Pah had said, I underscored the fact that there was a trust deficit between top party leadership. So he said that the top party leadership declined, I'm paraphrasing here, but a lack of awareness of the trust deficit and lack of, I guess, openness to address it. So perhaps he just, you know, decided not to go. And the other thing I really was watching out for was the presence of Dato' Sri Najib Razak, because that is, I think, also part of the factionalism within UMNO. And he turned up, so Dato' Sri Najib was there. He sat among his Pekan, I think, Pekan leadership as well, because he's still the Pekan MP. And there was also reports of him breaking down in tears over the singing of a song. So that he lost his composure a little bit. He apologized for that.
What song was that?
It's an UMNO song. I'm not going to repeat it on air. I don't know the words to
real
it.
Real tears or crocodile tears?
It looked like it was. Really? Looked like it was genuine, Chuang. It looked like it was genuine.
Amazing.
Yeah, to be fair. So we're going to come back and take a look at how the newspapers are covering the UMNO General Assembly and framing this in the headlines today. But that's coming up in about 15 minutes or so. We've got the news bulletin coming up next. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.